The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to Witchful Thinking, a podcast all about being a witchy woman in the modern world we live in. Each week, you can listen to these two witches banter about witchcraft, spell work, current events, intuitive wellness, spirituality, astrology, tarot, and much more. Our goal here on Witchful Thinking is to create content that informs and centers our listeners and helps them look at the world around them in a much more meaningful, magical way. Thanks so much for tuning in, and be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram for daily updates. We're thrilled to have Kelly Sparta on Witchful Thinking today. Kelly is a transformational shaman and the founder of the Sacred Power and Purpose Mystery School, where she works with people on integrating real-world skills with energetic skills to optimize a life path of happiness, success, and inner peace. Kelly specializes in helping focused doers optimize their success and minimize their stress. She combines personal growth with energetic tools to create a holistic approach to your own personal evolution. She's also the co-host of the popular Spirit Sherpa podcast, which has been listed on the top 25 metaphysical podcasts not to miss in 2021. We're super excited to have her on the show today. Be sure to check the description of this episode to browse her podcast episodes, website, and online courses on manifestation, healing, and finding your own inner peace. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Witchful Thinking. We hope you are doing well. We are super excited about today's episode. We have a guest with us. If you are watching on YouTube, you can see her bright face. This is Kelly Sparta. And as you will hear, a little bit about her in the intro, but we are going to be sitting down with her today, asking her some questions. She'll be telling us more about herself. And so we are super excited to have her on the show. If you haven't already, go check out her podcast and her website as well. Kelly, do you want to shout out your podcast information?
Sure. My podcast is called Spirit Sherpa. You can get there either by searching on your podcast or spiritsherpapodcast.com will get you there too. And my website is kellysparta.com, just like it appears on the screen, K-E-L-L-E. So, yeah.
I love how you spell your name. I've never met a Kelly that spelled their name with an E at the end.
You know, what's really funny is that my mother was an English teacher when she named me and she knew it was phonetically wrong. But she said, it's a name. It could be anything it wants to be. And my grandmother gave her no end of hell for that. But I have since done searches online. And it turns out that every Kelly who spells their name the way that I do, who comes up, is all in the spiritual field.
Oh, that is so interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
What a synchronicity.
Yeah, I've reached out to several of them and, you know, made friends and been like, hey, sister by my name, how are you?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God. Right. Yeah.
I love that so much. That is as a past English major myself, I feel like I would do the same thing because I know how much it would irk other people.
Mostly it just irks the kid. Nobody says their name right or spells their name right or whatever.
Yeah. You could never get like one of those keychains with your name on it.
Never. Never. My whole freaking life.
Yeah. That's hilarious. My mom was not an English teacher, but she was a history teacher. And she named my younger brother Jonathan, also spelled incorrectly, and she knew it was spelled incorrectly, but she just liked it better. And I remember him always
thinking like, I never get my name on the license plate keychain. And then
this like was something he wanted.
They just don't think these things through.
Right.
If it my makes name was almost Stephanie.
Stephanie?
Yeah, she just didn't want me to be called Steffi.
Ah.
She was like, I hate that nickname. And I'm not.
Yeah. You're like, no, I can't do it.
She's like, no, I can't. Yeah.
Yeah. I support her decision in that. No offense to anybody listening whose nickname is Steffi. It just sounds like stuffy to me. And that makes me think of like sinus infections. And I'm prone to those, so I don't like them. No, thank you.
So Kelly, we had our introduction with you, where we talked, or Brooke recorded that she talked a little bit about, you know, how you're the founder of Sacred Power and Purpose Mystery School and a little bit about your podcast and things like that. But do you want to give us a little bit of like your personal background, where you grew up and just a little bit about yourself?
Where did I grow up? Where did I not grow up? That's the question. My parents divorced when I was very young. I was like 5, and my mother went into the military to get her nursing degree. And so we lived all over the country. And so I've lived in, you ready? Maryland, Virginia, Louisiana, California, Hawaii, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, and now Virginia.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Wow.
So many states.
So many places, right? Oh, and for an entire year in 2002, I was on walkabout. And so I was homeless, living in my car. I was traveling in my car and various and sundry strangers took me in. And so I was living on $350 a month in the kindness of strangers and for a whole year. And I went 14,000 miles in that year. So I lived in a lot more places on, wow, you know, 1 week here, 1 day there sort of basis. So yeah, that I have been many, many places.
Wow. And
yeah. And you know, my mother raised me in the New Age movement. So, you know, she was not a happy person. And so she spent her time trying to find happiness, which you got to give her credit for. And she didn't, she never did. But she spent my entire childhood looking. And therefore I grew up with Seth and Ram Dass and Abraham Hicks and J.C. Knight and you name it. She brought it home. I mean, she went and did EST, which was a precursor to Landmark. And so she did that when I was like 6 years old and brought all the materials home and taught it to me when I was 6 years old. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. Right. And yeah, mom was my best friend and age didn't seem to matter. So just, there was no filter for age on there. But yeah, she had me doing psychic development classes. I could do self-hypnosis by the time I was 10. I was reading tarot cards at 12. I was doing palmistry. You name it. I've probably done it at some point in time. I studied different occult practices. I've gone through shamanic work. I've gone through Wicca, and hung out with the Druids. You know, I've been through a lot of different, traditions, because I traveled a lot and I did a lot of festivals and I did a lot of retreats and, you know, I've kind of run the gamut.
Yeah.
And in my childhood, I was also going to church a lot. So we would move and I would go to a different church youth group. So I've done most of the major churches.
That's interesting.
It's a very long list.
Were you going to churches at the same time that your mom was trying all of these different aspects of spirituality, looking for happiness? And how did you openly talk about that at your church, or was it kind of like, we're not going to talk about this here?
Well, my mother never went to church. My mother's policy was, if you want to go to church, I'm happy to drop you off and pick you up, but don't make me go with you.
I see. Yeah.
And so I went to youth group with whatever friend invited me. Right.
Yeah.
And so, it wasn't really a discussion because she was never there. Right.
Sure.
So, yeah. But, you know, inevitably I would get kicked out.
Yeah.
Because I'd always ask the wrong question and then refuse to accept the answer that made no logical sense. You know?
Yeah, that seems familiar. That sounds familiar to me.
Yeah. My favorite one, if I was getting tired of a youth group, my favorite question to ask was, okay, a prostitute has two children sitting at home and she can't feed them in any other way other than to go out and sell herself. And she goes out and she does what she has to do in order to feed her children. She comes home every morning and is fully repentant. Does she go to hell? And my favorite answer came from a pair of counselors who were leading the youth group. They were like 19, 20 each, right? You know, they were young.
Yeah.
And she said no, and he said yes at the same time.
Oh,
and
my
I was
God.
Like, I win.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is so funny. Oh my God.
That's, you know, that, and also just like your upbringing of not being closed into any one box and being so open to trying new things and just having that perspective is something that I wish a lot more people got the experience to do. I think a lot of us were raised in like one certain thing. For me, it was Christianity, and Brooke, you were more, your family was more atheist, right? They didn't, you know, did your grandma like went to church occasionally, but
she forced me to go to church until I was 14 and then she gave up. Okay. And then it was just never like, I never had anything shoved down my throat, but I was forced to go till I was 14.
Okay.
And she just got sick of me falling asleep in the pew. And she was like, forget it. Just fucking whatever. If you go to hell, you go to hell.
Yeah. But a lot of us don't get the opportunity to like in our developmental years, just be so open to all of these different experiences. So that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely got its upsides. You know, it made me develop my superpower, which is I can walk into any room and feel like I've been there forever. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned how to blend in energetically very quickly. But you know, the downside is that there's no ongoing relationships in your life. There's no, you know, history except with the person that you're traveling with. Right. So yeah. It was just me and mom. And so she and I held each other's history and that was it. We didn't have anybody else. So, you know, it has its upsides and it has its downs. Everything does, right. You know, yeah. You know, there's always, with every gift comes a challenge and with every challenge comes a gift.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I can't get over, I keep thinking of tiny little Kelly reading people's palms. Like,
I was really tiny by the time I did palmistry, to be honest. I was like 14. So, and I was never small. I was a very tall child.
That's still so young though. Like that's insane. Like that was one thing that I wanted to learn last year. I was very big into, like, I got a palmistry hand and everything because I wanted to learn so badly. And then I got distracted, but it's just so cool. Like I love that. Like I want to raise my, well, if I ever had children, I don't know. We're very like, we don't really want babies on this podcast, Liz.
Oh, I don't have children. Oh, yeah. I never wanted them.
This needs to be a theme on this podcast.
Yeah, it is.
Never wanted them. Thanks. I love kids. I just like to give them back when I'm done, you know?
Exactly. Yes. That's exactly how we feel.
I love my nieces, but I'll hand you back that when they shit themselves, you can have them right.
That's right. Thank you. Yes.
So like what led you to end up becoming a transformational shaman? Like how did that happen?
How much time do we have? So, all right.
If you could also explain to the viewers, what is a transformational shaman?
Okay. Yes. So that's a really good question because, if you ask 100 shamans, what a shaman is, they'll give you 100 different answers. Okay. So let me just say that because shamanism is not at all regulated. And occasionally some people get up in arms on a Facebook group and say, we need to, you know, give certifications. And everybody who knows anything about it starts laughing at them because it's totally antithesis to shamanism, but antithetical. But anyway, the being a transformational shaman is about helping people through transformative experiences, right? And so I do that with energy work, and with psychic skills, and with, you know, various and sundry, you know, all the different things that I can do, right? So I do tons of different things. So I'm sorry, I'm having an allergy issue today. And nobody told me when I moved to Virginia that it was the allergy capital of the US.
Mm. Oh yeah.
Okay. Rant over. So anyway. So, you know, I've spent my entire life studying energy and ritual and personal growth and self-help and psychology. And, you know, how could I not be a transformational shaman is basically what the answer comes down to. Right. You know, I study abnormal psychology texts for fun. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm strange in that way. My cousin used to say I was a scary kid. She said, you were a scary kid. I'm like, why? Now she's 7 years older than me. She said, you would just stare at me. Like, it was like you were just taking in everything about me and analyzing me. I said, that's exactly what I was doing. She's like, I know. It's a scary thing. Why did you have to do that? Like, because you were cool and I liked you and I wanted to be more like you. And you know, it's just like, you were a scary kid. I'm like, okay. So, but you know, I mean, this is, I've been a student of people. I'm a people engineer, right? I have studied how people work and what makes them tick and why they do what they do. And I understand you push here, pull lever there, push over here, you know, click there, twist perspective, boom, and now you've got happy, right? I understand how this works, but it's because I've spent 45 years just studying it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's just so crazy to me to think that like this has been as ingrained into your brain as like it is to me to turn a light off when I leave a room.
Yeah.
That's great. And I love that you specifically, how you talked about transformational shamanism and how you work with people who are going through these giant transformations in their lives, because that is the time that someone needs someone like you the most, you know, when they're just going through something so crazy, something that's so new to them, they don't understand. And Brooke and I have both gone through a lot of transformations, especially over the past couple of years. And there have been times where it feels like I'm just floating in space by myself, just trying to like swim somewhere, but you can't swim in space. So it's, you know,
that having sounds like an awful lot like foundational deconstruction. You're ripping out the foundation of your identity. And then you have to sit there and just sort of be for a while you wait for it to recoalesce.
Yes, absolutely. And how amazing it is to have a mentor or a guide or just someone who has more knowledge and wisdom than you, who can say like, you're going to be okay, even though it looks black, it looks like darkness right now and you can't see anything. So
I have a student going through that right now.
Yeah.
I had this conversation with him yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, I, and I'm like, yeah, it's okay.
I feel like that.
Yeah. It's all right.
I feel like that.
All right. Yeah. You know, you're exactly a lot where of the you time. Need to be. You're all right.
Yeah.
Get out. Cry it out. It's okay.
Exactly. Just breathe and be, and don't try to make anything happen.
Yeah. You know, and I feel like, I mean, I think especially Brooke and I have talked about this a couple of times on the podcast, is just how last year was probably such a catalyst for so many people to have a spiritual awakening or some kind of transformation, or people are just waking up to things that they're like, oh, I was actually at a soul sucking job and not doing anything that I loved, or I don't actually know who I am, or, you know, all these things that we've just kind of pressed down for years and years and years. And being at home and going through this collaborative trauma together has forced us all to like look inwards and, bring up the nasty parts that we've been pushing down for so long. And I'm going through that right now, like where I can't push it down anymore. I like have to, it's just right in front of me and I have to deal with it. I don't have the ability to push things down anymore after the past 2 years that we've had.
Yeah. Yeah. It actually started earlier. I saw it start. I saw the mass awakening start in 2016 when Trump won the election. And so it started in the Democrats at that time, because the Democrats went, what? They were like, how could this happen? It was not supposed to happen.
That just gave me chills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they flipped, right? And there was this moment of, we have no control over the outside world. Okay, I can't control that. I don't know what's going on. The world's gone mad. I've got to go inside.
Yeah.
And so I started seeing the awakening in the Democrats in 2016. And then when the pandemic hit, you're correct. It was a mass hermitage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anytime you do an initiatory process, you go into hermitage first to be with yourself. And then the initiation shows up in the process. And so I actually, on my podcast, we were talking about all of this process. So I was talking about it too, while you guys were talking about it, who knew? And I did an episode on the initiation. I did an initiation episode where people could choose their initiation to do it, because, you know, we were taking advantage of the space that was available, right? And this great resignation that's going on right now is just a reflection of all of that. People going, enough, right? And, you know, there's going to be more. There is going to be more. I feel it coming. We're going to see some mass shifts in how society operates in this country. It's already been significant. One of the things that I did during the pandemic was, you know, binge old TV shows that I used to love. And, you know, some of them were from the early 90s, and I'm like, oh, they did not age well, right?
Oh. You know,
the PC-ness was not okay, right? Uh-huh. You know, and you're just looking at things and cringing because you're like, ah, patriarchy, you know? And it's just, it made me aware of how dramatically everything has changed in just the last 20 years, 20, 30 years.
Yeah. Right? And that's such a short amount of time. I mean,
hugely short. Yeah.
For us, it's a giant quarter or a section of our lives, but it's really not a lot of time to have passed. And for the amount of awakenings that we saw over the past couple of years, I'm very interested to see how society shifts, because I feel like we're getting, at least this is like my perspective, is we're getting to a point of like no return on a lot of things, right? With the environment and the wealth gap, and how capitalism and the patriarchy is just like, it feels like it's all like, it's crumbling the majority of our society.
There are a lot more people who are benefiting from it than the 1%. Yes, the wealth is being coagulated, that's not the right word, but you know what I mean, into the top 1%. However, there are still a lot of people who have a fair amount of money, right, who are not in that 1%. And so, you know, there's this tendency to awfulize as we look at these changes that we're doing. And we need to be very careful about awfulizing, because when we awfulize, we also turn ourselves into victims. And we're like, oh, they're doing it to us. And when you're a victim, and when you're pointing fingers and blaming, you have no power. Your power goes wherever your finger points. Mm-hmm. And so the key is to stay, you know, in rationalness around it, and to say, yes, this is happening. It needs to be addressed. And it is not the world coming to an end. It is, we need to address it. We need to collectively put together and say, this is not okay. And we need to choose differently. And, you know, for those people who are in the higher echelons, they need to choose to be part of society rather than to hoard wealth, or they need to be forced to it. You know, that's how legislation used to work years ago. Mm-hmm. It used to be a 95 or 98% tax on wealth over a certain amount of money. And, you know, I mean, it can be done, but we have to be careful to stay out of victim while we do this, because when we step into victim, we step into the story that has been created by the people we don't want writing the story.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's, yeah.
That's not wrong. I mean, it does need to be addressed.
Yeah. Doesn't put you in a position to do anything about it, which is the difficult part of the whole thing is we can see all the things going wrong, but how do we fix it? And
that's the hard part, right? Is, you know, everybody can say, hey, it's wrong, but how do we fix it is the hard part.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Because it's a complex interwoven issue.
Yeah.
And there's I'm hoping that with all of
the changes that we've experienced in the past couple of years, that there will be like some kind of energy shift just in people caring about other people more, you know, because we all collectively experienced a trauma together. And there are still tons of people who don't care about others.
Beth. I was going to say, most of the people I work with, almost everybody has been traumatized. Yeah. You don't come into the spiritual world looking for a solution if you haven't experienced trauma in your life. It's just the nature of the beast, right? And the initial aftermath of trauma is hypervigilance and fear. And with hypervigilance and fear, it is me first and you last. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, you know, I want to just from an understanding of how people operate, it's going to be a while before the Karenage stops. You know,
I've never thought of it like that. And that makes a lot of sense. Like if you're looking at it as like a battle royale, like Hunger Games standpoint, it's like we've watched what happens. Like it is. Then that scares me. The every man for themselves mentality scares the shit out of me. I've never thought about it like that.
Yeah. It makes sense why that would be what comes next after a trauma. I mean, your body is just trying to protect itself,
right?
Or yourself and your family. You're just like, I just need my unit to be safe and I can't focus on other things until those basic human needs are met.
Yes. Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
Yeah.
Safety and security first.
Yeah.
So food, shelter, clothing, safety, you know, that's basic needs.
Right.
So, you know, and the less awakened people are, the more that will be present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other side of the coin is that the people going through awakening tend to go in the other direction where they lose their sense of self-preservation and put everyone else first.
And so it's like one extreme or the other.
Yeah.
It could be. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that, you know, both sides in their shadow.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You guys find it interesting that all the shit in the world happened at what is supposed to be considered the beginning of the Aquarian Age in March of 2021 and 2020. Like, I don't think anyone's really sure exactly when the Aquarian Age is supposed to start, like by year. Cause I feel like for years I've been reading when the Aquarian Age starts, when we begin living in the Aquarian Age, whatever. But over 2020 and the beginning of 2021, the more I researched, the more I was like, I think that we have begun to live in it, because there's all of these massive shifts around the way people look at money, currency in general. I mean, Bitcoin, NFTs, the online, like, I don't know how any of that shit works. I'm worried that I should know, because what
you
if-
should.
Okay,
absolutely no. I've been doing massive amounts of research. You need to know.
I just learned how to make NFTs like 2 weeks ago, and I started making NFTs and like just learning about cryptocurrency because I knew nothing about it.
Great. Yeah. One more fucking thing I need to worry about that I wasn't worried about before. Excellent.
Sorry. You do need to know.
So, okay, though, but what I believe you, but what made you realize this is something I should be paying attention to? It's not just the tinfoil hat people.
So I have a tendency to be an early adopter. I was a podcaster in 2005.
Oh, okay. Before podcasts were anything at all.
Yeah. I was one of the very first podcasters out there. And not with my current podcast. I was doing real estate sales at the time. So, you know, I was doing a real estate podcast. But the guys that I met there were all the movers and shakers, you know, and it is guys, and, you know, there were very few women in that space, but they're the ones who are doing these things now. And I'm like, oh, okay, you guys are doing this. I'm going to pay attention. Right. But there was also this, anytime you're, so I lived in Boston, which was the center of technology for the East Coast. Boston is the equivalent of the Silicon Valley for the East Coast. And anytime there's disruptive tech, if it lasts for more than 18 months, it's probably going to stick.
That's interesting.
So, you know, like Foursquare was big for a while and then it was gone. Right? Same idea. There's been lots of flashes in the pan where they get hot and then they're not. Right?
Yeah.
That's why I waited over a year for TikTok, because I just wanted to know that it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Same. I didn't download it for like over 4 years that it was out. I was like, no.
Yeah. So, you know, if it lasts for more than 18 months, it's probably going to stick. So, you know, Bitcoin is, I was reading about blockchain technology in 2006, 8, somewhere around there.
Learned about what the blockchain was like 2 weeks ago.
And I don't even know what that is. So someone tell me what that is. Shit.
It's a way in which they validate information. So it basically, the simplest way of talking about it is to say that it is a complex set of computers working together to each individually validate different transactions that happen so that there can be no fraud.
Right.
So imagine that you do a transaction and you have six different computers in eight different computers in six different countries that all have to validate that transaction at the same time in order for the transaction to be valid.
And this
that keeps things from being hacked.
Oh, okay.
Right? And so what I learned with Bitcoin is, so like the Bitcoins have to be mined.
Right. Which takes massive amounts of energy.
Right. Right. So, I mean, like it's, yeah, maybe we'll have to have you on another episode, Kelly, where we talk about financial things like this, because that would be a really great episode. And I'm sure there's tons of people listening that also don't know enough about cryptocurrency and NFTs and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit difficult to, like, when I was trying to learn about it, it was difficult for me to find a podcast where they were speaking a language I could understand.
Yeah.
I will
say that Tim Denning on Medium is a great resource.
Tim Denning.
Yeah. He talks about it. But yeah, I've just been doing a bunch of different research and Coinbase is a crypto wallet. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a place that you keep your cryptocurrency. Right. And they actually have educational sessions on different crypto coins that they will actually pay you to watch. They give you so many of the coins in exchange for learning about them.
I just started doing those courses.
Yeah.
So what in the world? I just feel like I'm just getting left in the dust, dude. Do you see the confusion that's like on my face? Like, I'm very tech savvy, but I'm over here just like, I'm like one of those old grandmas that's like, well, I went on the Facebooks. Damn, dude.
It's also a currency that like, there are other countries that are using cryptocurrency very heavily right now, because they have more, their dollar value is worth more in crypto than it is in their local currency. So like cryptocurrency like has more value than like the United States dollar, because the, you know, like that kind of a thing. And
but it's much more volatile.
Yes.
So from day to day, you could have a lot more money or a lot less money depending on the day.
Yeah.
So you have to have a lot of risk tolerance to be able to be willing to buy into the market.
Yeah.
But you know, if you look at supply and demand, you know, there's a lot there. You could go into a whole conversation.
Yeah. That needs its own, like,
that wasn't what you wanted to talk about today. So I won't go down that rabbit hole. Yeah. So.
Definitely worth its own episode or its own series for sure. So, we might have to pick your brain on that too.
Okay. I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I've been doing my own research and, you know, I'm happy to share what I know or what I think I know.
spiritual banking with transformational shaman Kelly Sparta.
I love that.
That's all. I'm dead serious. You see that me works. In your inbox in 2 months, I'm gonna be up here. So remember when we talked about this before Christmas? The people have demanded. I guarantee you there's gonna be people in our DMs like, I want to know about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to know about Bitcoin, go do your research now before the episode, because the last of the Bitcoins are being mined as we speak, and the Bitcoin's going to go through the roof when they run out of coins to be mined.
That's what I heard.
That's what everybody's saying. So, yeah. You know, if you want to learn about Bitcoin, now's the time to do it.
Go hop on that.
Yeah.
Add something about being a not only a hold on, never mind. You know when you think you're gonna say something really funny and then you can't get your words out and you're just like, never mind, it was fucking stupid. Anyway.
It wasn't funny to begin with, or you know, it would have been funny if I'd said it 5 seconds ago, but now it's just gonna sound stupid. Yeah, I do that all the time. Yeah.
since we digressed from, I don't even know how that happened. Liz and I
don't know.
All the time on the show. So it's honestly like people like that type of, our listeners seem to love that we go off on random.
Lady D. Yeah. It's all good.
Yeah. Brooke and I have not been officially diagnosed with ADHD, but we both firmly believe we have ADHD and that's just a part of the process on here.
I just call it a curious mind.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we'll just go wherever the conversation takes us. It'll be fun.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we set out to do in the beginning of this episode. That is exactly what we're doing. We're just
now. I know why you told me your episodes were 45 minutes to 100 minutes. Yeah. I was like, I sat down for this podcast and I called out to my husband. I'm like, this could be a while.
Yes.
They are long, and we provide a lot of information, a lot of laughs, and because I mean you never know like what you're gonna say, what little piece of information is gonna click for a listener. I mean it's our listeners are so diverse, they're so cool, they come from all different parts of the world, and I guarantee you there's gonna be somebody who jumped on here to listen to us talk about spiritual healing and also needed to know that there are other people in the world who are fucking confused about Bitcoin.
Yeah. 100%.
You know, Bitcoin can be spiritually healing. I can make that work.
Yeah.
Give me a minute.
I agree.
We can spin that a certain way. I mean,
I can make that work. Just let me think about it.
I just did an art show in downtown Denver, and I've like, you know, I've got my Venmo code up and things like that. And I'm like, or you could pay me in Bitcoin or ETH. I'll take it. Either one. You don't have to pay me in Venmo.
There you go.
I didn't know that was a thing. That's nuts. Whatever. All right.
So
I'm gonna have to just get on this so I can get on the same level as you guys for whenever we do this Bitcoin.
I'll catch you up, Brooke, on what little information I know.
God.
I'll catch you up.
We'll just have to have lunch. It'll be fine.
Someone's looking out for me.
Yeah.
It's good. Oh God. So okay. So I will be the group mom for a second, and I will reel us spiritually back.
Mom.
One thing I really wanted to know and ask you, because I mean, I guess the questions kind of change now after learning about how you grew up and your mom was bringing home all types of stuff and like just shoving your brain full of this like ethereal information from the get-go. I was going to ask, was there like a starting point or a catalyst that made you realize like, I want to help other people heal from difficult situations, traumatic events. I want to help other people find the thing inside of them that helps them. Like, have you just always?
I literally have high school yearbook signatures that read like my client testimonials today.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not what I do. It's who I am.
It's just, yeah. You've just always been doing it.
Yeah. I've just always been doing it. I don't know how not to do it.
You almost took the school counselor's job.
Pretty much. Yeah. There was a guy in high school who I used to meet with. And we would go out. He would pick me up in his van and we would go out and sit at his parents' construction site where they were building their new house. And we would sit and he would make a pass at me and I would tell him no. And then he would tell me his life story and why he was miserable and all the things that sucked about his life. And I would be his therapist for the next 2 hours. And
am I pointing to Brooke when I'm doing this?
No, but that's okay.
I'm pointing to her on my screen.
Okay.
That's like literally what happens to her all the time.
And they found us one time because somebody called the cops seeing the headlights out in the middle of the night at the construction site. And the cops called his parents because they ran the plates and realized it was him. And then his parents came out and forbade him to ever see me again. And within 2 months, he was in rehab.
Wow.
So I was like,
yeah, you just have this energy about you that like people feel they can just open up even if you don't know them very well. And they just get comfortable telling you like their whole life story or their traumas. And wow. Yeah,
there was a period of like 3 months when I was living in Boston where I would get on the subway on the T and I could have a book in my hand, reading a book, minding my own business. And someone would sit down next to me and say, "Hi, how are you? What are you doing?" And I would say, "I'm reading my book. What are you doing?" And they would say, "Well, you know, I'm having a hard day." And I'm like, really? And then their deepest, darkest secret would come flying out of their mouth. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh,
and I was like, do I have mother confessor tattooed on my forehead? Because holy crap, everybody is handing me their stuff.
Oh my goodness.
Like 3 months straight. It was just, I couldn't go out of the house without somebody handing me their stuff.
And did you end up doing like some kind of like energy protection of some kind or?
The wave came, the wave went. I don't mind. Yeah. I just, you know, it's not a problem. It's not like I have to fix it. It's not like I have to even remember that they gave it to me. They just needed to share it with somebody and I was available. Okay.
Sure.
You know,
that's interesting.
So it's not a burden. It's just, okay.
Yeah.
But it was weird.
That's good. And I mean, that's another indicator that this is just who you are. Like you are equipped for that because it's not too much for you. And it's, you know, you're just doing what your body and your energy naturally wants to do.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, people tell me all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, all kinds of stuff. And it's like, yeah, okay. You know,
I mean, I think that it's a different experience when it's, cause Liz, I know we're talking about when you were like pointing at me. It's a different experience when it's people like complete strangers that you don't know, just really being drawn to you out in public or like on the subway or something. But in my experience, it has not been like that. And it has very much been something where I have had to draw a clear line and be like, you keep your shit, like stop crying on my couch. Go home.
I had to do that.
Like
I did have to do that.
So you understand like the difference between like what me and Liz are used to, I think is very different from the type of like, because what I'm used to is people like trauma dumping and I don't like that.
Yeah. No. I was basically getting hit and run, right? It was like, you know, they'd give me what they had and then they'd leave and I'd never see them again. So I didn't have to hold it. I didn't have to do anything with it. It was nothing. Right. But you know, I had a housemate. So I used to live in what we've termed the magical house, right? And so so you asked if there was a turning point. There was a turning point for me in my life. I had gotten married when I was 21, and I was married for 7 years, and my husband was atheist. And so I had taken a break from my spirituality for that time that we were together. I had kind of wandered off from it in college anyway. So it wasn't like he said, you can't be spiritual. It just, you know, college, you know, partying, whatever. Right. And so I got married. We were married for 7 years. It wasn't a good fit. We loved each other, but we had nothing in common. Right. And at one moment, you know, on my Saturn return, go figure, at 28, I woke up and went, I have made the American dream. I have the trophy husband, the dog, the big house on the cul-de-sac lot, the successful business. I am a pillar of my community in volunteering for, I was president of Habitat for Humanity, an affiliate in my area. I'm like a pillar of my community, and I hate my life. I hate it. I'm in a cold war with my husband. I'm burnt out in my business. My dog doesn't like me. She's in competition for my husband's attention. You know, I never wanted the big house. We bought it because it was a good investment, not because I liked it. You know, it was just, everything was wrong. Right. And I just went done. And I raised it all to the ground. I divorced my husband, made him take the dog. I sold my business. I quit the affiliate, and I sold the house and moved out of state to live with a bunch of people I met at the Renaissance Fair.
I love that.
My ex-business partner said that I ran off and joined the circus, and he was not wrong. I lived in this huge Victorian house with all of these people. Sorry, my husband's breaking things. I'm not sure what's going on back there.
The people you meet at the Renaissance Fair are like some of the coolest people you'll ever meet.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So, you know, I worked at the Renaissance Fair, which is why I met them. But I lived in this house. It was this old Victorian house, 3 stories with 6 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms. I mean, massive, 3,600 square feet, big house, right? And I lived there with varying times 2 to 4 other people. And over the course of 4 years, people came and went, right? There were 3 of us who were sort of core. And I did energetic work with all of them. And we did healing work on each other, and we did magical workings together. That's where I learned how to do ritual, because that was something that my mother had not talked me through, was not, we had not done ritual work. And that's where I got exposed to shamanism. And I'm trying to remember why I started the story.
You're talking about your housemate that was trauma dumping on you.
Yes. No, he was not trauma dumping on me. I had a housemate in that house who was daddy to everybody in the community.
Oh.
And he encouraged everyone to come and bring their drama to our doorstep.
I see. Yeah.
And after a couple of years of this, I was like, done. And I'm like, okay, are you done? Because I'd really like to be done. He's like, oh my God, I'm so done. I'm like, okay, new rules. Nobody gets to come over unless they call and ask first. Nobody gets to drop the here. And I created a whole set of things around avoiding drama. I called it the 15-minute rule. And the 15-minute rule, it was, you get 15 minutes to whine about whatever's going on. Right. Now that number varies depending upon how significant the impact is. If somebody dies, you get a lot more time. If you stub your toe, you get a lot less. Right. But the average issue gets about 15 minutes for you to just whine. It's enough time for you to get over the shock and start to repeat yourself.
Yeah.
At the end of 15 minutes, you have 1 of 4 choices. You can go whine at somebody else. You can change the subject. You can stop talking, or you can start fixing the problem. Okay. If you do any one of the first 3, your problem is no longer my problem, and I'm very happy. Thank you. If you do the 4th one, then I will sit with you for so long as it takes to come up with a viable solution. And then you must implement said solution before you get another 15 minutes.
I like this 15-minute rule.
Right. If you have not Now, if I'm trying to help you find a solution and you yeah, but me to death, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, then I remove option number four and you only get one of the first three. Okay. Because you're not actually interested in solving the problem. You're just trying to milk my attention.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Milk my attention. Oh, that shit makes me so mad. Liz,
yes.
I talked about this like four episodes ago. I had a whole friggin' rant. I was so mad about people monopolizing my attention and my fucking time. And that's exactly it. Milking my attention just hit me to the soul. Okay. I'm done.
Yeah. And so people were very upset initially because they were like, you don't care about us, blah, blah, blah. We're like, no. We care about you. We're happy to help you solve the problem, but you're not interested in solving the problem. We're just not interested in listening to whining.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it took about a month and a half, 2 months for people to start to see the wisdom of this, because it took that long for them to get over the whine stage and start to want to fix something. And then they would say, nobody wants to hear me anymore because I've annoyed them with my whining and they're not willing to help me now. And then they would say, oh, but we haven't talked to the house about it. And they would come to the house and we'd be fully fresh to the subject and saying, yes, we'd absolutely love to help you. What do you need? And then they would go, oh, the wisdom of not whining. People want to help when you're ready. It's like, yes. And so this thing became a movement. And a friend of ours said that he brought it to the gay community in DC. And he said it totally changed the gay community in DC, that it'd been this bitchy, whiny, you know, complainy place. And he said he implemented this rule and everybody adopted it with him. They loved it and that everything changed. And I was like, cool.
Wow.
I was like, I'm glad I could help. But yeah, yeah, I was just trying to save my sanity, you know?
Yeah. Do you implement this 15-minute rule with your clients?
So my clients, so clients are different, right? Because clients are paying for the space, right? I don't let people whine for no reason.
Okay.
Right? Because there's no purpose served in whining for no reason. Whining for no reason is actually just resistance to change.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
So I don't let people whine for no reason just because it is counterproductive to them. I'm realizing it's getting dark outside, so I'm adjusting my light. when you whine, instead of solving the problem, what you're doing is investing in the problem.
Yeah.
And it actually reduces your ability to solve it, which is, again, the same reason why I was saying we need to stop stepping into victim around the larger issues, right? Because we're whining. We need to stop whining and start solving. Right. So yeah, I don't really engage a lot of whiny for that reason.
I think we figured out the title of this episode.
No whining.
Stop whining and start solving.
There you go.
I like that.
Why people fail to heal.
And I'm sure, you know, whining is just, that's a low energy, feeling, you know. That's not like when you're problem solving and you're in attack mode and you're like, I'm going after this, like your vibrations are probably higher than when you're whining and you feel stuck. You're at a lower vibration.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's absolutely true. So it's when we whine, we invest in our victim. We go into our misery box. So this is one of those things that I've had a long conversation with my podcast listeners on, is the misery box. We all have a misery box. It's the place we go, woe is me. Life sucks. Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. I think I'll eat some worms and I'll beat up on myself while I'm in here. Right. And it's like, you know, it's just this misery place. Yeah. And it's very comfortable because it's dark and it's warm and we know where the edges are, and because we built it and we know how to find it because we're there all the time. And it's not comfortable because it's a little wet and icky and it's kind of squishy and we don't know what's in the dark corners, but you know, we can't see it. So it's not so bad. Right. But we know where it's at, and, you know, we're not happy there, but we're comfortable there.
Yeah.
I feel that on such a personal level. Like, there have just been times where I'm like, I know that I don't like this. I don't like feeling this way, but I know how to feel this way. And it's right. comfortable. And it's like, I know how to do this, even though I don't like it. And right. it's a very conflicting place to be in, the misery box.
Yeah. So the misery box is not a good place to stay.
Yeah.
Right. Because we tend to awfulize and woe is me and live in our victim. Right. And yeah. so, you know, I do my damnedest to stay out of my misery box.
Yeah.
I used to wallow in it for long periods. And then right around the time I was a teenager, I started saying, okay, I'm limiting my time in my misery box. So I would give myself 24 hours to be in, you know, I didn't call it a misery box at the time, but I was like, I will wallow for 24 hours. And at the end of 24 hours, I will get up and move on. Right. And so over the years, it's just, I've given myself less and less time. And so now my misery box is, you know, 30 seconds to 2.5 minutes, depending on what the issue is, you know? Yeah. So not so bad.
Yeah.
You work your way up to it.
Do you recommend like shadow work to help people, you know, I guess recognize why am I in the shadow box? How do I get out of the shadow box? Why do I like being in the shadow box? You know, I'll just trying to like dig
the misery box, Liz, the misery box.
What did I say? Shadow box.
Not the shadow box.
So it's a good question, and I'm going to answer it with a very long answer. So, you know, I'm just giving you a warning, you know, buckle up. So shadow work is super important, but most people do it too fast. And there are two stages that you have to do before you do your shadow work. Stage one is you have to find emotional safety, which if you are living in your misery box a lot, you don't have, because you are beating the crap out of yourself on a regular basis. And you are assuming that the world is going to do that to you too. That is trauma brain. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you first have to get yourself to a place of finding emotional safety. And that is about addressing your fear and your anxiety and your worry and your dread and your self-doubt and your inner judgments and your outer judgments, and building a foundation of self-support and courage, right? So that's step one. And once you've done that, now you're no longer expecting the world to come flying at your face at any moment. So therefore, all of your bandwidth isn't taken up with defending. And now when you're asking yourself to grow, which requires leaving your comfort zone, now you feel okay to leave your comfort zone because you're not already so defensive that you're like, screw leaving my comfort zone. I can barely defend my comfort zone. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's why step one is super critical. And then step two is about solidifying your identity and your sense of self, which is also by the way, solidifying your energetic container and your personal power, which if you're going to try and do any sort of energy work, magic, you need to do. Otherwise you're leaking energy all the time. So if you want to test to see
way to think about it,
right? Yeah. So if you want to test to see if your energy container is solid, it's a very simple test. If you have to make a big decision, do you have to run, build up energy, and then pull the trigger immediately on the decision, or else all the energy drains out? If that's what happens, then you have a leaky container. Okay. And you need to work on that. If you can make a decision at any point without having to build any energy, then you have a solid container. Okay. And that's for big decisions, right? Small decisions we can do, but big decisions, right? So that step to solidify your identity, your sense of self, is about learning to claim your space and set your boundaries and own your power and internalize your sense of value so that you're not asking others for validation, and learning to love yourself. Those five steps solidify your identity, your energetic container, your sense of self, and your personal power, all in one. Okay. Now you need to do that step because to do your shadow work, you have to have a solid container to hold the energy of the traumas that you're processing. Everybody's always afraid to go into personal growth work and into doing their inner work and their spiritual work because they're afraid of being re-traumatized. And it's a very real fear. And it's a very real possibility if you try to do your shadow work before you do these other two steps. Because if you go into shadow work without having done the other two steps, there one of two things will happen. One is you won't get anywhere because your self-preservation kicks in and it says, this is dangerous. You don't have the facilities to do this, right? Or, which happens more often because when you've been traumatized, you often lose your sense of self-preservation. If you have no sense of self-preservation, you'll just go, wee, and you'll go flying in and go, wee, poosh, and now you've re-traumatized yourself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is why people are rightly so afraid of it, is because they're doing it in the wrong order. If you do it in the right order, you don't have to worry about re-traumatizing yourself because you've built the solid structure within you to be able to do the work.
Right. You have to have the tools to build the IKEA furniture first. You can't just, I don't know why I chose IKEA furniture.
Because it's just as complicated as personal work. That's why. With just as bad instructions in most cases, right?
Yeah.
It's a perfect metaphor. I really love the metaphor. Thank you. But you know, a lot of people, have you guys talked about what shadow work is?
We have not had a whole episode on it, but we have touched briefly in multiple episodes, but never gone in depth as to like the process. I have never done a ton of shadow work.
Okay. I have done a freak ton of shadow work.
Yeah.
And I am in the process of writing a book on how we evolve spiritually, and an intermediate to advanced level seekers book on the deeper levels of this work. So shadow work in its very essence, shadow work is self-inquiry work. And so it's very much about looking at what's going on inside of you. It's identifying your stories, your limiting beliefs, your assumptions, and then unwinding those so that you can get your emotional baggage down to neatly labeled carry-on sized.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you're never done. So let me just start with that. You know, if you want to know if you're done with your spiritual work, if you're still here, you're not done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's just, you're never done. So you've got to step out of goal-oriented thinking with this stuff.
Yeah.
And that's,
it's hard to do because that's like how most of us live our lives, is like from one goal to the next, you know?
Right. Yeah. But spirituality and personal growth work is all done in the present moment, and goals are all in the future.
Right.
If you're living in goals and trying to do spiritual work, you're basically fighting against yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to do work in the future on something that can only be processed in the present.
Yeah. That's something that we've talked about a lot recently on our podcast, is just like being present in the moment. And that's something that I struggle with, is like being mindful and being in the now and not in the future, because I'm like a chronic daydreamer and I'm constantly feel like I'm somewhere else, and I have to like actively work to bring myself back to the present.
I can help you with that with one thing. Would you like it?
Oh, absolutely.
So when you find yourself daydreaming, the question you need to ask yourself is, what's wrong with here and now?
Mm.
Why am I escaping?
Yeah.
I can tell that you were raised on Ram Dass. I got a big old Be Here Now on my bookshelf behind my desk. I can tell. It shows.
Yeah.
And it's not even something I realized was that important until recently, how much I don't live in the moment that I'm in.
Right.
And we've talked about this also, but like, I just started doing yoga recently, and I love how it brings me to focus on my body and my breath work. And like, I do feel very in the present when I'm doing yoga. And I was like, this is how I'm supposed to feel.
Yes.
I just have to figure out how to do this when I'm not doing yoga.
Well, so the balance there is about staying out of your head, right? It's about staying in your body. You know, Kathy, I work with Kathy, much like you guys are working together on this podcast. Kathy and I have been working together for 20 years now. And she's another transformational shaman. She actually has her PhD in this work. And, you know, she and I talk about the fact that presence is crucial, right? And she identifies as the bridge between the worlds. That's who she sees herself as.
Yeah.
And she refers to me as embodiment girl because I am the one who channels, and I will bring things in and channel them through me, and I bring healing energy through me. And I bring everything into physical form. Right. I always talk about how I'm the most grounded woo woo person you'll ever meet. Right. It's practical woo. Right. And it's because I'm all about being on the planet. You know, so many people walk into spirituality and they want to escape their bodies. They want to escape their lives. They want to go up into the spiritual world and stay there. So, you know, why are you here if you're trying to leave your body? Right.
Yeah. That's a good point. But I mean, and that's when I first started my spirituality, I felt like I wasn't here at all.
Right.
I was out floating, trying to find answers elsewhere, and I was totally avoiding planet Earth and my life on planet Earth, which is where I was actually where all my problems were.
Yeah. There are actual stages, and this is part of what I'm writing about in my book right now. There are stages of spiritual growth. So that, you know, the first one is the awakening question of there's got to be more to life than this, right? And then you start looking for it in the spiritual world, which starts the discovery phase of, you know, what is this stuff and does it really work? And then you go, holy shit, this stuff really works. I must tell everyone I know and drag them out to classes with me so they don't think I'm nuts. And thus you have entered the proof and proselytizing phase. And from there, you step into the prove it phase. I have to prove to myself that I can do this, not just that it works, but that I can do it. And so for introverts, they will go and do practice, 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 practice. For extroverts, they will teach classes. You know, they'll do little two-hour class here and there just to prove that they know it, right? That they can do it. And then at some point in that process, they wake up and they go, but I'm still not happy. And all of this stuff, which is so cool and I have proven I can do, doesn't make me happy. Mm-hmm. And I've been looking for the magic pill all this time that will suddenly make me happy, and it's not here. And they've gotten enough practice in at that point that they then start to turn within and say, well, maybe I am the magic pill, right? And that is when the true process of spiritual growth happens, is when you admit that you are the magic pill you've been seeking, and that all the answers that you've been looking for out there exist in here. And that's when you step into stage four, which is retreat for self-inquiry, retreat for research, and retreat for being with yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And then there are seven other stages after that I'm not going to go into, because you've got to get to them to get there. But and I don't want people trying to spiritually bypass, which is what happens. Ooh. Right.
Don't you get us started on spiritually bypassing, girl. We will go crazy. I felt so strongly about that shit.
Yeah. So, you know, the short answer is there is no magic pill. Stop looking for it. You are the magic pill. Mm-hmm. If you will go inside, which I know terrifies the crap out of you, and I understand it terrifies the crap out of you. It terrified the crap out of me too. But I will promise you that the very hardest step you will ever take is the first step. Mm-hmm. Because every step after that is easier, not because you're doing less work, but because you know it works.
Yeah.
Because you know that facing the stuff that you're facing has a positive impact on your life. And the first step is the hardest because you have to take that step on faith that it's going to make you feel better.
Liz, this is just like what we were talking about earlier before we started recording, when I was stretching on my yoga mat and I was like, you know what I fucking hate about exercise is that you can feel that your body likes it. Feel,
yeah,
that you're supposed to be doing it. So when you're not doing it, you really feel like a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing with doing yoga and stretching. It's so crazy that like later this month, we're actually having like a yogi on here. So it's weird that we're like, and like, we just keep thinking about yoga and talking about yoga, but like, that's the best way that I can explain it in a physical form is like, it hurts because it's healing in itself. Like,
yeah, right.
It hurts so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. Even make it hurt good. Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel when I'm doing it. And it's almost like, you know, how, so you're doing a stretch and you can't get your hands on the ground or all the way, right? Cause like you don't have enough space to do that yet because you haven't been practicing.
Right.
And then you practice and you can go a little further and a little deeper, but then there's that next, like, okay, but I can't go further than this.
Right.
But then you keep practicing and then you go even further and deeper than that. And you always reach a level of where you're like, this is it. I can't go farther. But with practice, you can continue going farther. And you're like, wait, how far can I go? If I keep practicing and doing yoga, it's a, you know, you always hit some kind of a roadblock and then you can get over it. And
yeah.
But you can't just jump into doing a full split. Like you have to.
No. And if you push, you're going to hurt yourself.
You're going to rip your legs open.
That's right.
Yeah. And you're going to turn yourself away from wanting to do yoga or shadow work. You're going to.
Which is a resistance.
Yeah. You're going to hurt your own damn feelings.
Yeah. I keep trying to tell people that self-judgment is resistance. It is just a way to avoid doing the work. If you look at something and you beat yourself up about it, it's a way to not have to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a hard pill to swallow.
It is. That one hurts. Like, it's just when you look and you're just like, in so many instances in life, you're the problem and you're the solution. And I was reading something earlier it's an Instagram account called I really don't know how to pronounce her name. Sirut Chawla. I might've botched it. I'm not sure, but I think she's a psychotherapist and she has a ton of posts about not only spiritually bypassing, but about like this culture that has been created on social media that anytime that someone makes you feel like you're too much or you're not enough, the problem is them. It's always them. You're always victim, blah, 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 you know? And so she was like, it's become so socially acceptable to look outwardly for the source of your pain and your problem, instead of understanding that your relational issues, like you are probably the common denominator in a lot of them. And it's just as important for you to spot your own potential red flags, just as you would if you were getting in a relationship with someone else. Like, you have to look at your own shortcomings and how you affect other people. And that's not taught enough, especially in this society where now people, it's like this Instagram kind of therapy. I think that's what she was talking about. Insta therapy, where it's like, take a deep breath, know that all of your thoughts are, you know, you have a right to be as angry as you want at this person and tell them how you feel. Like, it's just very, there's no growth that comes from that. There's no growth that comes from you shoving all of your shit on someone else and not taking any accountability and looking inwardly.
Yeah. The problem is that there's two sides to this argument, as there is with everything, right? Which is, on one hand, people who have been traumatized are often also gaslit and told that their feelings don't matter and that their feelings are invalid, that didn't happen. You don't have a right to be upset. You don't have the right to be angry. And so those posts are helping to offset the gaslighting, saying you do have a right to be angry. You do have a right to your emotions. You do have a right to take up space in your own life. You know, you do have a right to these things. And at the same time, you know, then there's the other side of it, which is once you have claimed that you have the right to your emotions, now you have to be responsible for your actions.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, the problem, I don't think the problem is the posts themselves so much as the fact that people don't understand that there's a spectrum.
Exactly.
Right. And so, you know, that's the starter point. And then you have to evolve from there. Right.
Yeah. And you can't apply it to everything in your life, especially right. the situations where you are the one in the wrong. And just because we're entitled to our feelings doesn't mean we're always right.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, the expressing it to somebody else, right? This has come up for me several times in the last few days where I'm having conversations with people about, you know, somebody's upset and do I clear it with the other person or not, right? And, you know, the best advice I ever got on that was from the Human Awareness Institute. And they said, if you want to be deeper in relationship with the person, then you clear the upset. If you are done with the person, then you don't clear the upset because all you're doing is dumping.
I agree.
Right. So the upset is your problem if you don't want to have the relationship, but it's something to be shared if you do.
Yeah. That is a very good, that's a great way to, like, before, you know, if you, there's like a chronic dumper or something, you can just be like, I just want to ask you first, are you telling me this to complain? Are you telling me this because you value our friendship? I've been here before you before, you value my opinion and you genuinely want help on a solution? Or are you just trying to cry on my fucking velvet couch?
So let me be clear. Clearing is saying I'm upset with you as opposed to I'm upset in general.
Okay. Right. I thought you meant like somebody was coming to you with like a problem at work or whatever. Okay. Yeah. That changes. Yeah.
If somebody's coming to you with a problem. So the rule of thumb is if you want to take your stuff to somebody else, you need to get their permission to do that. So you need to come to them and say, I need to vent. Do you have space for that?
Yeah.
And if the person says yes, great. You get to vent. If they say no, then you got to find somebody else to vent to. You know, yeah. And ideally you will say, I need to vent. I don't need a solution. I just need to vent.
Yeah.
Or I need to vent and then I need a solution, but I need to vent first. Let me get it all out. And then we can talk about a solution. Right. But to be able to be clear about what your expectations are of the person that you're bringing your upset to, right. If you're bringing upset about someone else to that person, right. And make sure you're bringing it, check your goals. Because sometimes we bring our upsets to get other people on our side.
Yeah, I know exactly how that feels.
And if you're doing that, that's because there's something in you that says that you might be wrong.
You want validation and you want to be backed up.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, sometimes, you know, if you come from an abusive background where you were gaslit all the time, then it can be very helpful to say, you know, was I wrong? Right. I call those reality checks. Right. It's like, hey, I need to come to you for a reality check. Was I wrong? This is what happened. Mm-hmm. Right. Because my default is to assume I'm wrong, or my default is to assume I'm right. Right. Because we have different defense mechanisms when we get hit with gaslighting. Some of us will be like, I'm right all the time, no matter what. Screw you. You don't get to tell me I'm wrong. Or the other side is, okay, I'm always wrong and you're always right, and I'll just do whatever you told me, right? So we swing, right? So whichever side you're on, you need to assume that maybe the other side might be true,
yeah,
right? And then you do the reality check, which is not a, I'm going to try and get you on my side. It's a, can you give me an outside perspective on this? Because I don't know.
Yeah.
I That's like a very different and more powerful yeah. place to come at it.
And I like the... I like talking about, I mean, essentially consent when you need to mm-hmm. vent or you need to share an energy that someone else might not have the space for at the moment.
Right.
And that's only something that even Brooke and I have been talking about just this past year about, okay, do I have the emotional capacity to have this conversation? But we're not taught to ask people, do you have space for me to tell you this right now? And I think it's only in recent times that people are starting to think that way. And it's, I really love it. I mean, I'm sure it helps preserve relationships and set boundaries, and it's good for everyone all around.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to tell if somebody is like, if it's even worth keeping a person in your life. Cause if you say you don't have space and they get pissy and don't want to listen, it's just like, okay, well then what was option number three? Stop talking. Right. What was option number four? Get the hell out. Someone else. Fine. We'll do that. Have it your way.
Yeah.
If somebody doesn't respect your boundaries, they're not your friend.
No, absolutely agreed.
Yep.
They're using you. If someone doesn't respect your boundaries, they're not your friend. They're using you. Mm-hmm. I had to say it again. Somebody needed to hear it twice.
Yeah.
Yes. I trust your intuitive instinct, lady. Yeah. I do.
And this is the other thing that you have to recognize, is that as you step onto your spiritual path, one of the things that happens as you grow, you will outgrow your friends.
Yes. Hmm.
And what will happen is that you also create cognitive dissonance for them, because what happens is that they see you grow and they realize they're not growing, and they go, well, maybe I should be growing, but I don't want to grow. I don't want to. So no, it's, I'm not the problem. She's the problem.
Yeah.
And I'm going to drag her back down. She's getting too big for her britches, and I'm going to drag her back down, and I'm going to make her be her old self. And I'm going to tell her she's a terrible person for not being her old self, because I don't want to have to deal with the cognitive dissonance of me feeling like I'm being left behind. I'm being abandoned. I'm not growing. And so I'm going to make you feel bad so that you come down to my vibration. Vibrationally, this is actually smart vibrationally, right? Because if you'll buy in, they'll drag you down to their vibrational level again, and they get to stay friends with you, right? Yeah. For their purposes, that works, right? But you have to recognize that, no, they're just finding a way to break up with you because they don't want the cognitive dissonance. And so you don't have to engage the drama to do that. You can just say, you know what? I think we've just grown apart, and this just isn't a good fit anymore. And they'll probably have a meltdown about it. That's okay. You know, not your problem. But, you know, there will be a fallow period when you lose a bunch of friends and you have no one. There is always a fallow period where you are sitting in the empty space and going, what did I do? I lost all my friends. And then there are some moments when you're doing this and when you're reflecting on your life where you're going to go, am I just a terrible person because I keep leaving all these people, and all these people that used to love me are not here in my life anymore. Maybe I'm just a bad person. No, you're not a bad person. You just keep growing.
Yeah.
And the people that you're hanging out with are more and more evolved. If you want to know if you're a bad person, look around you. Are you hanging out with bad people? If you're hanging out with bad people, you're probably a bad person. Okay. If you're not hanging out with bad people, you're not a bad person, because good people don't hang out with bad people.
You're typically a mixture of the five people you hang out with the most.
And you make the same amount of money as the 10 people you hang out with the most.
I've heard that one too.
And it's totally true.
Yeah.
Well,
so interesting. So many things, so many ideas that we could talk about in the future, but they like all need their own episode because they have so much information.
I'm like that. I'm sorry.
Oh no, no. We gotta pick our we have to pick our Osara egg. Every week we pick an emoji for listeners to go under the Instagram post, and if they got to a certain part in the episode, we'll know, because they'll know what the emoji is, and that's our Easter Osara egg.
Yes, gotcha. I used to call them like hidden Easter eggs. And then we're like, we should call them Osara eggs.
We're witches. What the hell are we doing?
We don't celebrate Easter. What?
Yeah. Hello.
Let me. What emoji would fit this episode?
I like the ones with the little mouth that goes, you know, up and down.
Oh, the one, the confused looking one.
Is he confused? I never could tell if he was confused or like, oh, good grief, Charlie Brown, like, or. You know,
where is it?
Can't see it. Hold on. It's
good. Oh, I'm in portrait mode. And it won't focus.
I think I know.
It's probably because of the background blur that it's not seeing it.
Okay. I think I know which one you're talking about. It's the one with the squiggly mouth.
The squiggly mouth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yellow emoji squiggly mouth. I call him little confused man.
There you go.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I like that one. That was my favorite.
If you got
never use them
this far in the episode, go and comment the yellow face emoji with the squiggly mouth, the confused man. And you cannot miss him if you go to your emojis. I don't know his damn name. I don't know a word to type in to get him, but if you just go to your emojis, there's a man with a squiggly mouth and he looks either yes. constipated or he looks like, you know what he looks like? He looks like he doesn't want to get out of his own way. That's what he looks like.
He looks to me like Charlie Brown. Oh, good grief.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That is the good grief emoji.
Yeah.
Yes. Just like when Charlie Brown's whole face goes like yeah. can't do it. That was so ugly.
That's yep. exactly it. Yeah.
Oh God. Well, I am so glad that you were on today. Thank you so much.
This was fun.
Yeah.
Literally, we have I am totally down to get lunch with you if you want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, let's do it.
Listeners, we found out Kelly and I live in the same city. So
you're in trouble now. If you live in Richmond, you're in trouble.
Yes, we really have to. I think it would be so fun. And I'd love to show you some of the like cool hidden spots in Richmond that are just like very out of the way. They're very magical. And it'll give you a different idea of what the city's like outside of the pandemic.
I would love that. But Lord knows I need to get out of my house. So
I'll get you out of there. Don't even worry about that.
If you want to, you know, you want to come over for a fire in our backyard, you're welcome to do that too. We have a wonderful fire pit with a cauldron with flowers in it.
And I'm jealous.
I have a massive cauldron. It weighs like 100 pounds. And it's got its own stand.
Get out.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, I'm coming.
Yeah, I probably have a picture. Show you.
Oh yeah, I need to see this. Yeah, I have one tiny little cauldron. It's like, you know, palm size, and I use it to paint. I keep like my paint water in it, so when I'm like changing a color on a brush, I'm like using my cauldron.
I put my ritual candles in it, and I hold them up with coffee beans so that when it burns down, it smells like hot coffee.
Oh, that's brilliant. I love that idea.
It smells good.
That's awesome. I'm scrolling back so I can find a picture of it in the sunlight. Most of my backyard pictures are in the moonlight right now. So bear with me. I will find it. I swear. But yeah, I have this, I found it, here actually. It was for sale and it was a larger cauldron and a smaller one, and small by small, I mean, this one was like, you know, yay big by yay big. It was, you know, it was a good size cauldron with a stand, but I got them both for $150. It was a steal.
Nice.
Like, oh my God. Must have. So,
take my money.
Right. Take my money. Take it now.
Yeah.
Take it fast before somebody else comes to ask for it. There it is.
Yeah.
There it is. You see it?
Oh my God.
Holy cow.
Damn, that's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Massive.
Wow. Massive. That is a steal.
Well, right? I know I'm coming the next full moon.
That's what I'm saying.
That's so cool.
So, you know, we got it. I got drums. I got the whole nine yards. And I got a neighborhood where people make noise all the time. So nobody's going to give me shit for drumming.
Nice. I will link all of Kelly's information in the description box. She, again, her podcast is called the Spirit Sherpa Podcast, and her website is kellysparta.com. That's K-E-L-L-E, Kelly with an E, because she's cool, Sparta, S-P-A-R-T-A.com. And I know we're going to have you back on here at some point, too, so I'm not even going to say goodbye. I'm going to say see you later.
Okay, I'll be back.
Awesome. Thank you guys
Call for me listening. Over.
Thank you guys for listening. And we will be back possibly next week. We may take a quick break, but we'll be back at the end of the month with a very special guest to help us into the new year. So stay tuned for that. But we love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.